The Legend of Korra is a sequel to the hugely popular animated series Avatar: The Last Airbender. It takes place 70 years later in a darker, more industrialized world where bending the elements is commonplace.
Korra is now the Avatar, and she's everything her predecessor Aang wasn't. She's a confident, headstrong teenage girl, much more comfortable with combat than with the spiritual aspect of her role. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Glenn Weldon. Today we're talking about The Legend of Korra on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
There are these networks of staunchly pro-gun groups on Facebook. And one of them is run by these three brothers, the Door Brothers. But it turns out, they don't just do guns. The Door family name has been attached to other causes.
Their goal is to eliminate public education and to replace it with Christian schooling.
The Roots of the Door Family on the No Compromise podcast from NPR.
Welcome back. You just met NPR Music Stephen Thompson, and joining us again today from NPR's Code Switch, Gene Demby. Hey, Gene.
Hey, what's going on, yo?
And also here from San Antonio, Texas, we have writer Kiana Fitzgerald. Hey, Kiana.
Howdy, howdy.
Okay. As we mentioned, The Legend of Korra is a sequel to the animated series Avatar: The Last Airbender. It originally aired on Nickelodeon from 2012 to 2014, and it recently became available on Netflix, which is why we're talking about it. Warning up top, we're going to be talking about The Legend of Korra as a whole, up to and including its finale, so if you haven't watched it all, save this discussion for later. When we first meet Korra, she is a toddler who busts through a wall and famously shouts, "I'm the Avatar, deal with it," which is A, pretty much the essence of her character in the early going, and B, a really effective way to distance her and the series from the previous show. In Avatar, our hero Aang was reluctant and gentle and cautious. Korra is impulsive and quick to anger. Aang was deeply spiritual. Korra hates that aspect of her role and spends a chunk of the series cut off from it. She faces different bad guys every season, each of whom is driven by a different, and not altogether evil, motivation. And then there's the very different world of this series. A lot fewer bucolic countrysides, a lot more urban steampunk locations. All of those things I have just mentioned made Korra a more controversial show when it aired than Avatar ever was, and we'll get into that. But we got a lot of questions from listeners about the series, so let's kick it off with one of them. The first one comes from Joshua.
I am new to the Avatar world, so I just am watching them for the first time on Netflix. And one thing I'm noticing is that there seems to be a very strong reaction about Legend of Korra. A lot of people who think that it kind of ruins Avatar. So I am curious, is Legend of Korra worth watching? I'm kind of nervous. Haven't started watching it yet, but would love to hear what y'all think.
All right, this is a very simple but very good question. You're always asking any kind of sequel or spinoff to justify its existence. Stephen, what do you think? Is Legend of Korra worth watching?
Yes. Yes, it is absolutely worth watching. It is a very, very different show. It is a different show tonally. It is mostly different characters. It is structured differently. The villains vary wildly in, I would say, quality. But every element of this show takes something from Avatar and make it more complicated or subvert it. It is a show I have spent, I think, a lot more time thinking about than I spent thinking about Avatar: The Last Airbender, a show that I deeply, diligently love. Mm-hmm. I plugged into this show emotionally, maybe a little bit more than I did Avatar, in part because this show has these echoes and reverberations from Avatar. It is set 70 years later. And so you find out not only what happened kind of in the immediate aftermath of Avatar, but in the long-term aftermath. There are characters, main characters from Avatar, who did not survive 70 years. The whole basis of this show is built around the fact that Aang has died and been replaced by a new Avatar. And so you're finding out kind of what happens to Aang and what happened to Aang's family in ways that are really emotionally rich and resonant. At the same time, this show has flaws that are much deeper and more frustrating than the flaws in Avatar: The Last Airbender. There are whole characters I find deeply annoying, like Milo, who bends his farts.
No, I love Milo.
Explain who Milo is very briefly, Stephen.
Milo is one of Aang's grandsons, one of the children of Tenzin, who is Aang's son, and who is kind of Korra's mentor. He's played by the great J.K. Simmons. And so you have so much intergenerational conflict in this show, and so many characters, all of whom have their own arcs. This is a very messy and complicated, and I think deeply, deeply satisfying show.
That's a yes from Stephen. Yes. Kiana, is it worth it?
I really enjoyed it, but I will admit I ran a marathon like over the past week and a half. I was watching Avatar when the lovely Jessica Reedy reached out and asked if I wanted to be on this show. And I was like, you know what? I can make it. I can do it. And I literally finished like an hour ago. Like, I can't believe I made it, but I made it. And I'm so glad that I did. I will say it took me a little bit of time to get connected to Korra rather than the amount of time that I took to get connected to Avatar. And I think it's because with Avatar, I was learning this whole new world, this new style of like bending and, you know, spirituality and all these elements to make that show what it is. And then I was transported to this, you know, steampunk-esque land, and there are people who are using bending for non-spiritual purposes and non-holistic purposes, so to speak. And I was just kind of like, what is this place? Like, and I guess that was the point, to kind of like jar me out of what I was expecting it to be. So as someone who literally watched the shows back to back, like immediately, I would say Korra was enjoyable. And this isn't a slight, but I would say you don't have to run to watch it. It'll be there. But, you know, for Avatar, I would say, like, run full speed to watch that show. But for Korra, if you have other things that you need to catch up on, Korra will be there for you. And it's a very, very solid watch. I enjoyed myself. I loved certain characters. I love Bolin. I loved Milo, even though Steven did not like Milo. I thought he was such a ham. And I really enjoyed his character. And I liked Asami. I thought that she was great. Oh, I think that there are some really, really strong characters, but I also think that some villains should have been placed later in the show, I think. I wouldn't say that it ruined the Avatar legacy at all.
Okay. I mean, now, Gene, you have seen Avatar 6 times through, is it?
Yeah,
so
six times.
I am
very
curious if you've seen this one more than once and what you thought of it.
So after we finished, my wife and I finished Avatar, the sixth time for me, the first time for her, she was like, oh, I wish there was more. I was like, oh, there's a sequel. And we decided to watch Korra. And she was like, what do you think of the show? I was like, I've never watched it again after the first time I saw it. I remember when it was being promoted before it actually premiered, I was really amped for it. There's a lot to say for the show, right? I mean, the voice cast is ridiculous. It is, I think, objectively like a prettier show. Like the animation, obviously, there's years passed between Korra and Avatar. And so the animation technology, they just look better. I mean, it's a better looking show. So in Avatar, almost all the characters have individual arcs that move somewhere. And in this show, they're just all of these characters that feel like blank slates that never really feel like, you almost sort of know what their deal is as soon as they show up. Like the first time you see Mako, like, oh, I know what this cat is. I know what's going to happen here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And pretty soon he and Korra start dating, or they have some romance, and it feels like sort of unearned. It almost feels like this is what's expected of the show. It just feels a lot less tight, and there are a lot less, I think, tentpole episodes. In Avatar, there are these episodes that sort of stand alone as just like really, really excellently done. I think there are fewer of those in Korra. I think there are definitely some. I think partway through the show, as Korra's doing her sort of spiritual evolution, we learn about the history of the Avatar as a sort of role that people inhabit. And that is a beautiful series of episodes. The animation style changes dramatically. It looks almost like hand-painted. It's really beautiful and almost feels like it belongs in the previous series. There's so much stuff about Korra herself that I found frustrating. Like, my wife and I kept telling each other, like, oh, is she going to walk in here and start throwing some punches and realize that she made a mistake again? You know what I mean? It's like, she's a little hard-headed in a way that kind of is grating. And I think once you get past the second season, which is probably the weakest season in all of the seasons of any Avatar-related franchise, the third and fourth season are really strong, although they're less strong because of Korra and they're more strong because of the cast around her. But, yeah. I think it's a pretty good show. I mean, I don't feel the same compulsion to rewatch it for a third, fourth, or fifth time, but I wouldn't turn it off if it was on, you know?
I mean, that's three qualified yeses. I'm going to add a fourth qualified yes, but if you had asked me at the end of season one, I would have said, nope, don't bother, because the main plot line of season one was about sports, and the subplot was about corporate sponsorship of sports. Yeah. So we had jocks and CEOs as our heroes. And oh, if I hadn't been for the show, I would have been out. In a very real sense, the magic of the world of Avatar was gone because bending has become commonplace, mundane. Mm-hmm. And instead of traveling the world and seeing all these beautiful vistas, we get stuck in this steampunk city, as you guys mentioned. And because of the nature of who Korra is, all the spiritual stuff was missing, which is why I was so grateful when season two came along. Because not only does that spiritual stuff come back, it comes back with a vengeance. Mm-hmm. We get an origin story. We flash back to the first Avatar. We get a glimpse of that ancient world, as you mentioned, Gene. I did like all the callbacks. I like seeing people like Toph again. Yes. Altogether, it is much less pure, simple, and clean than Avatar was, which had a conceptual simplicity. Once you start throwing in things like lava bending and a lot more metal bending, then we're kind of getting a little bit more muddled and some would say adult. And as this discussion is reflecting, this show hasn't been as universally embraced as Avatar was. And Nickelodeon was never really fully on board because they didn't even air the fourth and final season. They just shunted it onto their website. And it's coming for some of the same critiques that Avatar did in terms of its voice cast, which is pretty white. It also has been critiqued because its themes are much darker. Korra goes through trauma and survival and has to process that trauma. And people questioned if they were appropriate for children. Some folks are taking issue with Korra's heavy sigh, air quotes, likability, which you kind of touched on, Gene. Mm-hmm. Because it is structured like the mirror of Avatar, right? Instead of having a young neophyte learn and grow, we have a person who's very cocky get broken by the mm-hmm. world. And so yeah. it's doing different work. I mean, I'm not accusing you of this, Gene, of course, but like a lot of the critiques of Korra I've read might not have been applied equally if Korra were a dude. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. 1,000%. Yep, absolutely. Yep.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's a lot much chewier, your show. There's a lot to chew over. Okay, these next two questions come from some of our younger listeners who are massive Airbender and Korra fans.
Hello, Pop Culture Happy Hour. My name is Emerson Parker, and I'm here with my little brother, Finley Parker. Hello. I was wondering, what was your favorite couple? The little romances in both shows are so cute. I really, really liked Aang and Katara in the end. They were so awkward and likable and funny. You loved them, but Mako and Sami were also enjoyable. Maybe a little bit more bland, but whatever. Finley has a question for you also.
My question is, what is your favorite type of bending? Because there are so many different types. My favorite is lava bending it's lava. So,
all right. Thank you so much. Bye.
Good point there. It is lava. You gotta can't disagree with that.
Well, actually, I'm gonna start with the bending question, because I do think, considering that metal bending is an option, I think lava bending is the most metal of bending. and the fact that it manages to combine fire and earth and metal is pretty tough. I do think water is my favorite, as I said in the discussion of Avatar The Last Airbender. As far as the couples go, I swear this is true. I went in entirely unspoiled on Legend of Korra, and in season one, I was so frustrated with the kind of love triangle that they set up with Korra and Mako and Asami. And I kept turning to my son and just saying, like, why doesn't Korra just date Asami? This is stupid. And I found that love triangle stuff really dumb. And I really appreciated the fact that long about the middle of season two, which I think is where this series really takes off, they kind of dispense with that stuff and they're kind of less interested and they're more interested in subverting it. And so for me, the couple I was most interested in was Korra and Asami, mm-hmm. which I was never expecting them to acknowledge in any way and was very pleasantly surprised when they finally did.
Yeah, I was also surprised. I wouldn't necessarily say pleasantly because I was looking for it. I knew it happened.
Yeah, they didn't do enough.
So when there would be a scene where the two of them together early on in season two, I was like, oh, this is where we're going to see it. We're going to set it up. But really, it all came down to the last 30 seconds of the final episode. And mm-hmm. that's what everything kind of rotates on. I don't know. Kiana, favorite couple and favorite bending.
I know this is about Korra, but the question addressed both shows, so I will speak gladly to Avatar.
Loophole.
Aang and Katara. I mean, I'm such a sucker for like love stories, even though I don't do like rom-coms and stuff like that. I'm still like, when it comes to like a show where you can kind of subtly see the foundation being laid, like episode after episode, season after season, and just seeing, you know, the flushing of their cheeks whenever one of them addresses the other in a way that they weren't expecting. It was just so, so cute. And when Aang finally kissed Katara, I was just like, I melted. So even though they're children, not in a creepy way, I was just like, oh, finally, you know, they're finally addressing their feelings for each other. So I knew that they would end up together, but just kind of seeing that play out was really fun. I also agree that Asami and Korra were the two that I was rooting for and that I was hoping was going to come about sooner than it did. And as we said, it kind of just happened in the last 30 seconds to a minute mark. And, you know, they just kind of held hands and faced each other. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay. So, you know, I didn't really know what else to do there. But, you know, I really liked them in the end. And bending, I have to agree with Steven that water is my favorite pure elemental bending power. Water was always the one that I was like, you know what? If I could do this, this would be it.
Gene, I know you're a water guy. Who's your favorite couple?
I mean, yeah, I like Aang and Katara for all the reasons that Kiana just stated. And yeah, to the point about Asami and Korra, I wonder how much of that was like exactly when it was on TV. It was on Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
It felt to me like, oh, here's a queer couple. We're going to be really skittish about it. Or we're going to like leave a lot of stuff unsaid until the very last moment. And I remember the reaction once when the finale first aired, how people were really moved by it. But in retrospect, it feels like a kind of a cop-out. Like they wanted to have this thing that was really important, right? To see this queer romance on the show, but they also played it as safe as possible. Like, there were going to be no subsequent episodes. And again, like, if that comes out today in a post-Steven Universe world, like, maybe it's not a big deal, right? But
yeah,
when I see it now, I was like, oh, that feels so much tamer than it did now than it did in 2012, 2013.
Yeah, I mean, for me, again, water. But in terms of couples, I never really reacted much to any of the romances on either of the shows. I mean, I never liked Aang and Katara together, actually, because I always got a Phantom Menace, Anakin and Padme vibe there, which was unsettling. And if anything, it's going to come down to Varric and Julie. Yeah. Varric is voiced by John Michael Higgins.
Yeah.
They have what I think is a mutually consensual dynamic that they do renegotiate at the end. In a really good way. Couple communication. It's important. Okay, we've got one last question from Chris about the show's bad guys.
I'm a big fan of both Avatar The Last Airbender and The Legend of Korra, but I worry sometimes that in Legend of Korra, there is an undertone of elitism that makes me wonder if I should be rooting for the villains, particularly the villains in the first two seasons. It makes you kind of feel like maybe the villain should win this one.
The thing I do like about Korra even more than Avatar is that these villains have a point. They're not entirely wrong. Fire Lord is evil bad guy who mwahahaha. Mm-hmm. But each of these four villains kind of go, yeah. I think they're onto something there. Kiana, what do you think?
Oh man. In Korra, I understood where the bad guys were coming from, but as annoying as Korra could be, I still was like, you know what? I'm on her side. I'm down for her. Like, let's do this. The villains, though, especially season two, as I watched from season to season, and then I kind of looked at them all together, I was like, how did they plan who was going to go where? Like, I kind of wondered, like, to what extent was the evilness of each respective villain? And I thought that season two was like outrageously evil. Like, I thought that like that was the Dark Avatar, correct?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. So I thought that that was as bad as it could get. Not just someone who whips up some machines and, you know, says down with, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, I thought that that was the scariest one. Mm-hmm. But other than that, the villains were all very villainy to me. And I thought that they arranged them in an interesting manner.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing, too, is that because of the stakes of the season two season and just like we later find out just how much damage Korra does with her relationship to the previous Avatars, it felt like more like the climactic villain than the villains we got in season three and season four. Although those are really good villains because, to Glenn's point, they had really interesting points of view. Even the first season, what I didn't like love that villain so much, but like the logic made a lot of sense. It's like, look, in a world in which a bunch of people have superpowers, a whole bunch of people who do not have them would feel oppressed and marginalized, right? Like, I mean, like that makes a lot of sense that a whole bunch of people are like, yo, we need to rearrange our society in a way that is not oppressive to us, right? And of course, thinking about this now, right? Like in the context in which we live, it's like, oh, the police force? There's a bunch of cops running around with superpowers? Like, I mean, like, that would immediately set off also some alarm bells in 2020 that maybe didn't set off in 2013 for the people writing the show. And so it's just like, oh, I would totally understand why people would be like, we can't have these superpower people running around administering justice and upholding the law, as it were.
Yeah. Steven, villains.
Yeah, I think this show has such an interesting relationship to its villains. I appreciate, among other things, that this show adds to the equation a trickster in the form of Varric, whose allegiances kind of shift over the course and who injects the show with a lot of humor. He is voiced by the great John Michael Higgins. I think that character adds so much. But in some ways, at some times, he is contributing to some of the villainy in ways that I found really enjoyable. I think my least favorite villain, as much as Unalaq, the villain of season two, is a mwahaha, I found Amon even more annoying and really was the reason I didn't really dig season one as much as any of the other seasons. He's basically Bane in the Batman thing where it's like blah, 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 blah for the entire time. And I just, as soon as they moved past him, I liked the show so, so much more. I don't necessarily think that the show is on the side of elitism, as the questioner brought up, so much as the show finds the Avatar navigating this world where people are constantly trying to reset the balance and constantly kind of trying to seek a new order that is in some way more fair, though with the possible exception of Henry Rollins, kind of resetting this more egalitarian order in which the villain just happens to sit at the top of it. And so I think this show has a very nuanced understanding of how power can corrupt and is constantly contending with that in interesting ways. There's a fascinating line at one point where Korra is doing the bidding of an evil queen. She's like, why do I feel like I'm on the wrong side of this? And I think that the show has that understanding in a nuanced way, but it's much more complicated. This, as I said at the top of this show, this is a messier story. This is a story where they're contending with a much more complicated world than Avatar was dealing with. And I found that very powerful.
Yep. It's a more complicated world. It's approaching the complications of our own world. And maybe that's why it doesn't seem like the pure fun escapism that Avatar did. We want to know what you think about The Legend of Korra. Find us at Facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. And if you have a second and you're so inclined, please subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. And we'll see you all on Friday when we will be talking about the new Netflix adaptation of The Boys in the Band.